Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We will proceed this morning, and Justice Pfeiffer will be joining us shortly. We are here on case 12-1723, Ronald Snyder et al. Versus the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. For the appellant, Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. Eastern Ohio is blessed with many abundant natural resources, including coal natural resources and oil and gas. There are wide areas in Eastern Ohio where all or portions of the coal has been severed over the last 100 years, and there is a natural tension between the rights and interests of the surface estate and the rights and interests of the mineral estate. This is an important case about whether the prior holdings of this court with respect to those relationships.
Counsel, excuse me, could you speak a little more directly into the microphone or adjust it? I'm having difficulty hearing you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. This is an important case to determine whether the prior decisions of this case should be expanded or clarified with respect to that relationship between the mineral estate and the surface estate.
Which decision are you referring to?
The Scivlocki decision of this court in 1974 and the Graham decision in 1996 primarily, Your Honor.
How do you see Scivlocki as applied to this?
I'm sorry?
How do you see Scivlocki as it applies to this?
Well, I think it's a starting place, Your Honor. In both of those cases, the Supreme Court was faced with a question as to whether surface mining is permissible on tracts where the coal had been severed. And in both of those cases, this court declined to adopt a bright line test that required an express mention or allowance of surface mining in the deed for surface mining to be permitted. Instead, in both of those cases, this court recognized that the primary question is what was the intent of the parties to those old instruments. And it went through an analysis to try to determine the intent. In each of those cases, or in those cases combined, the court followed the same analysis, and it looked at three factors to determine the intent of the parties. Whether or not the language of the deed expressly referred to deep mining was one factor. The second factor is whether or not the deed expressly referenced what the surface was going to be used for, primarily in the Graham case where it said for agricultural purposes. And the third factor is whether or not the extent to which surface mining was known and recognized in the area at the time of the deed.
Counsel, let me ask you, you say a bright line has not been enunciated by this court. And if in this case we were to announce a bright line, what would it say?
If the court was to announce a bright line test, I submit that it would say that unless the coal severance deed expressly granted the right to the mineral owner to surface mine, to extract minerals by surface mining.
Is surface mining and strip mining the same word?
Yes, and the state in its briefing acknowledges that it's the same procedure. The bright line test would say that unless there was an express reservation of the right to extract minerals by surface mining techniques, that those methods were not permitted.
To take you back to Scivlocki, paragraph 2 says the right to strip mine for coal is not implicit in the ownership of a severed mineral estate.
We agree with that, Your Honor.
We have a severed mineral estate here?
We do have a severed mineral estate. And if the reservation in the severance deed merely said that the grantor reserves a coal, then the principle that you just mentioned would apply, and there would not be a right to surface mine. This particular severance deed went on beyond that and said that the grantors reserve all the mineral rights. We think all the rights may suggest that. But more importantly, it said, including the right of ingress and egress and reasonable surface right privileges. Now, the lower court holdings, we believe, eliminate any meaning for the phrase reasonable service rate privileges. The parties clearly intended that the mineral owner had more rights than simply ingress and egress.
You agree that strip mining is incompatible with the enjoyment of the surface estate?
Well, it's compatible with the portion of the surface which is strip mined. One of the facts that we believe...
Well, if the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has a campground on this property, strip mining would be incompatible. You'd agree with that.
We agree with that, and we believe that's why the parties, in their expression of their intent, said that the right to use a surface must be reasonable. We believe that triers of fact can and have often considered in the determination of reasonableness that balancing. We believe that by saying that the mineral owner had reasonable surface right privileges.
Wouldn't that be an entrance to conventional mining?
We believe that it applies to both, Your Honor.
Okay, so it's both in your view.
It applies to both. One of the issues in this appeal is that the lower court seemingly, and this is where we believe that there needs to be clarification, we proposed both a small area of surface mining and also auger mining. Auger mining is an underground mining technique. The surface above where you auger mine is not affected by the mining, just like deep mining. The real difference between other underground mining and auger mining is that in auger mining, a machine goes in and gets the coal out, while in a traditional coal mine, people go in and get the coal out. But this court said that you could not use any portion of the surface to open up the face you need for auger mining. We believe that's a clear misreading of this court's prior.
So is it intended to do both strip mined and auger mined, or strip mined or auger mining?
Your Honor, frankly, the appellants own the coal rights. There's coal there, which is merchantable. We would like to find out if we can do anything out there.
You haven't identified either of those techniques with certainty that you will be using.
We offered a proposal that was adopted by a coal mining company that it involved both surface mining and auger mining.
Okay, so you want to use both, and you only want to use it on 60 acres of this
650-acre tract. The proposal was to affect no more than 65 acres. That includes roads and piles of coal. But frankly, if the law, you know, we think reasonableness, if the finder of fact finds that using 29 acres is reasonable and 65 is not reasonable, we can live with that.
Okay.
We
just need to. And the distinction between the cases that Justice O'Donnell asked you is they were going to use all of the surface in those cases, correct?
There's clearly an indication in Skivlaki and Graham that substantially all the property would be affected by the surface mining activities on those properties.
That is not the case here. Do you have, I'm presuming that part of your evidence is that the restoration of this property at the end of the mining would be compatible then with the surface use for the other 600 acres?
It was, Your Honor. This is a wildlife area, and we had expert testimony that, in fact, opening up an area of the forest for post-reclamation is good for wild turkeys and diversity of the wildlife in there. So it certainly is not, you know, irreparable injury to this surface.
But it would be during for the duration of the mining.
When you're surface mining, or frankly, when you're deep mining, as to the areas of the surface right. affected by that, you know, it's very disruptive.
But we don't know the length of time it will take to extract the minerals?
I don't believe that was in the record, because this was simply a preliminary plan. From the very beginning, the state said, we will not allow you to surface mine one square inch of this 651 acres.
Mr. Keller, as a technical matter, just to understand, if I understand it correctly, the mining would take out the minerals from underneath, and then you talk about the subsidence of the surface. Is that correct?
Not in this type of mining, Your Honor.
Okay, what type am I describing then? When it's scooped out underneath and then the land falls, say, 6 feet or so?
Frankly, the majority of the coal currently being mined and sold in Ohio is mined by an underground technique called longwall mining. And longwall mining does, in fact, take out all the support, and it anticipates subsidence of the surface. I believe something like 65% of all the coal mined in Ohio is done during longwall. This case has some impact on that, too, because arguably, you know, if there is a bright line test, none of these old deeds expressly grant the right for longwall mining because it wasn't known until, you know, 20 or 30 years
ago. So that's where you get into this intent. The deed itself was back in 44, was that it?
1844, yes, Your Honor.
So what the intent was, as you say, the reasonable access to the minerals.
That's right.
And we need something other than a summary judgment here. Is that what your argument is?
We believe that determination of reasonableness should be done by the trier of fact, just like they determine reasonableness in a lot of things. In fact, the evidence will be that that the owner of the property who sold the surface to the state knew there was strippable coal, had leased the strippable coal on the property. The state, when it acquired it, in an appendix to our reply brief, there's an Ohio Attorney General's opinion which reviewed the title before the state bought this. They recognized, they mentioned in there that the strippable coal had been leased to a third party.
Counsel, was strip mining an acceptable practice of mining in 1944?
The record is yes, Your Honor. In Jefferson County, the historic records indicate that I believe it was 38% of the coal in that year was extracted by surface mining techniques, and that percentage was steadily increasing.
So didn't the trial court look at the intention of the parties in 1944 when they said not an inch?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the trial court, we believe, established or held that this court had established a bright line test, and that if surface mining is not expressly mentioned, then it is not permitted, and that we believe.
That's right. The Court of Appeals found that the trial court found that this reservation of rights did not include strip mining, which was a technique that was in effect in 1944, correct?
It was. That's correct, Your Honor.
So what is the standard of review today?
We believe it's de novo because the judge found that as a matter of law, and the Court of Appeals found that as a matter of law, absent the expressed bright line statement that surface mining is allowed, that it is not allowed, and that is that's it flipping the holdings of this court in Skivlaki and Graham. In those two cases, it would have been very simple for this court to say, it doesn't say surface mining, you can't surface mine. Instead, in both of those cases, in 1974 and again in 1996, the court expressly acknowledged that there would be an analysis of what was the intent of the parties and not the intent of the
over this way.
I'm sorry.
Even if we agree with you on those points, even if we say there's no bright line, you can submit extrinsic evidence. What evidence was there here? Could you respond specifically to the state's point that the trial court rejected your evidence and said this is inadmissible hearsay, and that hasn't been challenged? That hasn't been challenged on appeal. So in the end, do you still lose?
We may, Your Honor, on this.
Already? I mean, I guess even if we agree there's not a bright line, we agree that evidence can be submitted and the trial court should consider it. Didn't the trial court consider the evidence here?
Respectfully, Your Honor, what we believe the trial court and the Court of Appeals failed to consider was the language chosen by the parties, which says that the mineral owner reserved reasonable surface right privileges. There was no determination of what was reasonable or not reasonable as applied back in 1944.
So your response to the state's brief that says the trial court looked at this extrinsic evidence and said this is inadmissible hearsay, it doesn't matter?
Not a good fact. There's an inherent issue in trying to determine what the party's intent was decades before, when there's no one still alive who was there. We believe that the court erred as to, you know, what was extrinsic, but the evidence was, and there would be additional evidence now, that the parties recognized that there was surface mining. There was valuable coal deposits that could be removed only by surface mining on the property. And the language they used, they acknowledged that the coal owner had the right to use the surface. The limitation they placed is that that use must be reasonable.
Are you trying to say, Mr. Keller, that the word reasonable would include technological improvements, that the intent of the parties was if industry were to come up with different means and methods of extraction, that as long as it's reasonable, that was included within the intent?
Yes, because there has always been a balancing between the rights of the mineral estate and the rights of the surface estate.
Mr. Keller, this property has been the subject of litigation on this very topic in the Common Pleas Court back in 1962. Are you familiar with that case?
I believe both we and the state learned that after the Court of Appeals.
In fact, argument. The very topic that we're talking about, the right to surface mine, was the subject of a determination of the Common Pleas Court more than 30 years ago.
Your Honor, that is correct. And
why is it that if the court said reasonable surface rights do not leave room for writing into such words by implication the right to destroy the surface, why is it some 30, 40 years later we do that? Why isn't that binding?
Your Honor, that decision from the court was a preliminary decision granting a TRO.
Oh, right, but it was a determination of the court on the very subject matter.
It was a determination that the court was likely to rule that. I don't believe that either party has been able to find any kind of a final decision by that court, so we do not believe that a ruling on a motion for a TRO is necessarily binding precedent as to that property or those parties.
So the net effect of that was there was no mining that took place.
There was no mining at that time.
There was no appeal of the Common Pleas Court TRO. Apparently both parties walked away from this.
Or they reached some settlement.
That settlement didn't include mining.
We don't know.
Has this property been mined? Has this coal been mined in the last since that TRO?
I do not believe there's any evidence that this property has been mined since 1963.
Counsel, are you suggesting that a TRO that is not appealed does not fall under res judicata?
I believe that a TRO is a preliminary ruling in a court. A bond was required, presumably, until the matter was adjudicated on its merits. The standard is different, as the court is well aware, for a TRO than necessarily for a finding on the merits.
But it is a court order, is it not?
It was a court order.
That affects the rights of the parties?
It affects the rights of the parties.
It was not
presumably
appealed.
It was not appealed.
I'm sorry?
There's no evidence that it was appealed or there were any further proceedings in that action.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hendershot.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I want to cover three main points here today. The first is that the state is here as a landowner, just like any other in the state, and not as a regulator. Second, that the plain language of this deed bars the right to strip mine. And finally, if there was any doubt on that score, that Ohio's clear statement principle that stretches back to 1884, reaffirmed as recently as 1996, resolves any doubt in favor of the state's ability to use its surface as it sees fit. And here that says, old growth forest and as a hunting preserve.
Counsel, what about the suggestion that we see in this case where you've got a mineral rights owner, they're being held to a reasonable standard and they come up with, here's a reasonable standard. We've got 600 acres, we shall strip 60 of them.
Sure, 2 points, Your Honor. One about language and then one about the clear statement principle that you and Justice O'Donnell both asked about. The language here is not simply reasonable mining. The language is reasonable surface right privileges. That is language that speaks of a restricted use of the surface, a use of the surface as an adjunct to get to the coal, not the right to destroy the surface to get to the coal. Another point about the language is that language, reasonable surface right privilege, is there next to a right of ingress and egress. So by the principle that words are known by the company they keep, a principle we apply to statutes and contracts, the company the words reasonable surface right privilege keeps are ingress and egress rights.
Well, that's not a limitation. You're reading that as a limitation, that the egress and ingress are limitations on reasonable surface rights?
Not that they're a limitation on reasonable surface rights. They are themselves an independent limitation. It wouldn't make a lot of sense to have an ingress and egress right if I have the complete ability to destroy the surface to remove.
It wouldn't make any sense to have that those rights to enter and a property if it wasn't to get to some place to do something.
Absolutely. The ingress and egress
rights.
Okay, so
that's what you need here. You just don't have the right to drive across the property for no reason. There has to be a function or something that is going to, and that's connected to the mineral rights. That's the way it's being read, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We read both clauses.
So you get there, and are you saying, all right, let me back up. What type of extraction of the coal would the state allow?
Right, it would be traditional deep mining principles.
Which would be what?
Well, that is using the surface to get to the subsurface. So traditional room and pillar mining or other kinds of subsurface mining that don't do violence to the surface, whether it's the subsidence that Justice Lansing was talking about or entirely removing the surface as Snyder and Neely are proposing here. So the ingress and egress rights, you're absolutely right. Those are rights to travel across the property to get to a point where you conduct deep mining. And reasonable.
But if that deep mining is not, if this coal is not conducive to that extraction method, and this other method is a reasonable, and when you know, with all the permutations of the word reasonable, why is that not permissible, given the fact that strip mining was known at the time in the 1940s, it was used earlier than that. The concept of restoration of the property obviously was in effect at the time. Why is that not permissible?
Let me take those in order, Your Honor. The first, as to the strip mining was known in 1944, I think that actually cuts against Snyder and Neely. It means that parties drafting a deed in 1944 knew they should distinguish between strip mining and deep mining.
Why do you say that? That they knew they should have done that when maybe their intent was you can mine this coal or any other mineral any way you want?
Well, that's not the language they used, Your Honor. They said reasonable surface right privileges. And just a couple of years before 1944, as we see in the State versus Beatty opinion that's been discussed, the same grantors that are the predecessors in interest to Snyder and Neely gave an option to another person for, quote, all strippable coal. That's how you give the right to strip mine, not by saying the rights of ingress and egress plus reasonable surface right privileges. So that's why the language, the ingress and egress language.
So let me be clear, because you have another document that says all rights to strippable coal, and that's not included in this document. You say because it's absent, that means they didn't want it.
It's both because of the language they used, and I say the fact they used all strippable coal in the past shows they knew how to grant the right to strip mine. That's not what they did with the language here, but don't just take my word for it.
You couldn't take it as a meaning that you can only use strip mining for the extraction of the coal in that other property, and here reasonable surface rights would indicate you can use any. Why could not it be read that you could use any methodology to extract the coal?
Well, several reasons, Your Honor, both within the language and within consistent with Ohio's clear statement principle. Within the language, reasonable surface right privilege is a limitation on using the surface as an adjunct to get to the coal.
It seems
look at footnote one.
Why isn't it a matter for the fact finder? I'm having the same difficulty here. I mean, the Court of Appeals said as a matter of summary judgment, the state should win. But when you have language that seems to suggest this is going to be a judgment call, Isn't that a matter for a fact finder to determine if there's a dispute between the parties?
It's not, Your Honor. It's not just reasonable mining, which perhaps would open things up to the kind of litigation that they're proposing that requires experts, geologists, biologists, and so forth. It's reasonable surface right privileges. Look at the discussion in footnote 1 of Scivalocchi, where the court considers reasonable and necessary use of the surface, and although not a holding of the court, suggests that that is not language that permits strip mining. Look at the Colorado Supreme Court's decision in Smith that this court, when surveying the country in Graham in 1996, one of the cases this court favorably cited. That was a holding of the court that said reasonable and necessary is not language that permits strip mining. So the language itself allows this case to be resolved on summary judgment. But if there's any doubt there, a clear statement principle in Ohio law that has been there since 1884, look at Scivalocchi, look at Graham. They require.
And the fact that those encompassed all the acreage instead of a portion of the acreage, you don't think is an important factor here?
No, Your Honor. Respectfully to my friend here on the other side, I think that's confusing the application of the principle in those cases with the principle that runs throughout those cases from 1884 to 1996. Chief Justice Moyer, when he was writing in Graham, pointed back to the 1884 case, Bergner, and said the principle of that case, not the application of the principle in the case, the principle of that case was that there must be an express inclusion, an express grant of the right to strip mine. Look at paragraph 2 of the syllabus in Scivalocchi. You can't imply the right to strip mine. I don't know how to look at this language. There's only one sentence in this deed relating to mineral rights, and I don't know how to look at that and look at what Snyder and Neely are proposing and not say that they're trying to imply the right to strip mine into that language.
Mr. Hendershot, is there any application of collateral estoppel in this case in your view?
Your Honor, as Mr. Keller pointed out, both the state and the other side here came upon this case serendipitously after the Court of Appeals opinion. So collateral estoppel or res judicata was not raised, and we don't raise it in this court. And as the discussion with Justice O'Neill pointed out, that it being a TRO, it probably doesn't have collateral estoppel effect, but it certainly has persuasive effect, as you pointed out, Your Honor. This is the same grantors, the same property, the same question. And it shows not only that these grantors knew how to distinguish strip mining from other kinds of mining, it shows that this question was litigated and there was a temporary injunction to prevent mining as a result of that litigation.
Thank you.
Counsel, as I understand your argument, what you're really saying is reasonable surface right privileges can never mean you get to take away the surface.
Exactly.
Is that right? Would that answer change if we had 65,000 acres instead of 650 acres?
No, Your Honor. This
percentage is dwindled down.
No, Your Honor. It's a categorical distinction that's both there in the language, and there I point that language back to the footnote 1 in Scivalocchi and the Colorado Supreme Court opinion, both saying that very similar language doesn't imply the right to strip mine. But more importantly, it's this clear statement principle that stretches back to 1884, reaffirmed as recently as 1996. It says, if surface and subsurface rights are severed and someone owns the surface, somebody else owns the subsurface, it's so surprising that you would give to the subsurface owner the right to destroy what you have retained. There must be clear and unequivocal language.
You just have to retain the surface.
Yes, if surface and subsurface are owned by different people, the clear statement principle says there must be express inclusion of language that shows the subsurface owner has the right to destroy somebody else's surface.
Let's say for the moment we disagree with you and we do establish, or we say we agree with your friends on the other side and we say there is no bright line rule, the trial court can consider evidence. Can you help me understand what evidence was presented and is there a question of fact remaining if we were to adopt their first two propositions?
Your Honor, even if you were to consider evidence, I think the most powerful extrinsic evidence is the State v. Beatty opinion and what it lays out as to what these grantors did. As you pointed out, Your Honor, all of the evidence, as far as I read the trial court's opinion, was excluded as hearsay, so there's a significant barrier there. But if we open this up to extrinsic evidence, I think the power of what's described in State versus Beatty would still allow the case to be resolved on summary judgment. So even if you reject the first-tier argument on the plain language and the clear statement principle as the second-tier argument, and you get all the way down to extrinsic evidence, I think you still rule in favor of the state.
And you would say that even if we find that the reasonable, the language in the deed suggests that the parties were to look and see if the technique was reasonable under the circumstances?
Well, I don't think
in that case, it seems like it is a real question of fact.
Your Honor, I think maybe the easiest way to think about that is to think about alternate language. If the deed read reasonable strip mining or reasonable surface extraction or a reasonable number of acres to strip mine, then we might have to get involved in a trial that goes beyond summary judgment to determine how much is reasonable. But we're not faced with that.
Would we have to use the word ambiguous to get there?
No, I don't think that you do, Your Honor. I think that the plain language resolves the case in favor of the state. The clear statement principle means if there's ambiguity in the language, you resolve it in favor of the surface owner. And that's not just the state. That's any surface owner. Farmers, recreational use owners, homeowners across the state, all are in the same position as the state, which is the first point I wanted to make.
Well, I haven't quite heard the answer, though, to Justice French's question of what evidence, if we were to open the floodgates, would there be? There's a suggestion that there would be evidence that, sure, we're going to strip mine, but when we're done, this is going to be wonderful land.
Well, that's evidence about today. That's not evidence about 1944. And Judge Bruzzese, who's been in Jefferson County for some time, if you look at the trial transcript, he talked about what reclamation looked like in 1944. It looked like nothing, if I take Judge Bruzzese at his word. So in 1944, it was even more important than today to explicitly mention that strip mining would be allowed because there wasn't the significant restoration. If you did a severance deed today in 2013, then reclamation might play into it. In 1944, there was no such thing. So it did extraordinary violence to the surface, more so than what happened today because of what reclamation.
And who's your source for that?
I was just talking about what Judge Bruzzese, the trial judge, mentioned both in the trial transcript. He talked about his perspective on what reclamation.
Okay, but that's not evidence that we're to consider here.
No, I don't think there's evidence in the record. I can tell you there was not any reclamation requirement in 1944. You're right. His statement, Judge Bruzzese,
so your position, evidence. Your position today is that this contract is not ambiguous, it is enforceable, and there shall be not one square inch strip mined.
That's absolutely right. It's unambiguous for several reasons. If you look at the language, compare it to the language these same parties used when they gave all strippable coal, look at how it's paired with the ingress and egress right. Look at how this court in Scivalaki in its footnote one discussion, look at how the Colorado Supreme Court treated reasonable and necessary use as similar language.
But all this is all predicated on your position that this will destroy the surface. And if you couple the analysis with the restoration requirements and the technology and the product that results from restoration, it's not a destruction of the surface. It is a temporary alteration of the surface, but I wouldn't say that it's a permanent destruction of the surface, where it will not be utilized for hunting and all of the other uses that the surrounding 600 acres are being utilized for recreational purposes once it's restored. So I question whether the word destruction of the surface is not something for the trial court to look at as well.
Well, we don't even have to get to destruction of the surface, Your Honor. The clear statement principle in Ohio law that has both historic roots and enduring vitality says you must explicitly, if you're the subsurface owner and you want to mine by destructive techniques, even if they're destructive temporarily and there's eventually restoration, it must be there expressly included in the grant.
And that's what the Graham case is saying. Is that what you're hanging your hat on?
I think that's in Bergner, it's in Ohio Collieries, it's in Scivalaki, it's in Graham. That is the principle that runs through
and
those cases.
The difference that I see in those cases was 100% of the land was going to be mined, and here we have a tenth of the land.
Your Honor, that's the difference between application of the principle and the principle that those cases stand for. Look at what Chief Justice Moyer did when he surveyed the other state Supreme Courts around the country and said those states adopt the same principle we do here. Look at the language he concluded the opinion with, saying the, quote, clear rule that the court reaffirms should avoid future unnecessary litigation about whether strip mining is included. Those are indications that Graham reaffirms a longstanding principle, not that it's just its application.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Keller, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. May please the court, we would ask the court to separately consider the question of auger mining. Auger mining is an underground mining technique the state has acknowledged that we have the right to do underground mining techniques, and the fact that we disturb a portion of the surface to access the coal to use for auger mining does not change the principle. When we would ask the court to look at the Quarto mining case of this court in 1976, which held that any mining necessarily involves some disturbance of the surface.
Well, I think it goes without saying that any mining is going to result in some destruction of the surface, but we're not here to parse out whether the trial court and the appellate court got it right on auger mining and not strip mining or both of them or whatever. I mean, if we find that the summary judgment was, I mean, that's a decision for the, with instruction to the trial court to take a look at. That's not something where we're going to, especially based on this record. Would you not agree?
We are simply suggesting that this court needs to clarify the fact that the mere fact that a portion of the surface is temporarily disturbed during underground mining does not prevent that form of underground mining.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.